Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
This is Healthy Children, brought to you by the American Academy of Pediatrics on RadioMD.com. Here's Melanie Cole, MS.
Motor vehicle crashes are the leading cause of death for children in the U.S., and in roughly 20% of the cases, at least one driver is legally drunk. And this is so scary and so serious. My guest is Dr. Deborah Greenhouse. She's a pediatrician in Columbia, South Carolina. Dr. Greenhouse, welcome to the show. I'd like to talk about drunk driving and our teenagers, as I have a teenager who's 14, going to be driving a little bit in the next couple of years. It terrifies me, as it does every other parent. Tell us about what's going on now in advocating for, you know, mothers against drunk driving and students against drunk driving, and how we can keep our children from getting in the car with somebody who's been drinking or drinking themselves and trying to drive.
Well, I think that the key is the education piece of this. We know how many drunk driving accidents occur. We know that motor vehicle accidents are the number one cause of death in teenagers. And we know that a lot of them involve drunk drivers. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers does an amazing job of education. They do an amazing job of advocacy. And there's been a ton of advocacy nationwide as far as increasing the restrictions on drunk drivers and getting them off the road, and mandating things like ignition interlocks, which really can make a huge difference in drunk driving rates.
What is the ignition locks that you're discussing?
An ignition interlock is a device that's put on a car, and the driver has to blow into it. It's like a breathalyzer. The driver has to blow into this device, and it has to show that they have no alcohol in their system before the car will turn on.
Wow. So, Dr. Greenhouse, is something that parents would want to put in their cars when their teens are driving? Are we starting out from a place of mistrust if we do that?
If we do that to our teenagers, we may very well be starting out from a place of mistrust. And I don't know that that's really where we want to go. The idea is that we want to take our convicted drunk drivers and we want to make them use an ignition interlock, because that's where it has been proven to decrease repeat offenses. Unfortunately, a third of all arrested drunk drivers right now are repeat offenders. And
wow.
Fatal drunk driving accidents, there was one in South Carolina that led to the passage, that helped lead to the passage of our ignition interlock law. The driver in that case had been arrested at least five or six previous times for drunk driving.
That is so scary to hear. And what would you recommend parents do to start this discussion? And I just had one last night with my own son about drunk driving in anticipation of this show today, and about getting into the car with someone who has been drinking and what they can do. Give parents the words to begin that conversation, because that's where the hardest part. Sometimes the conversation, Dr. Greenhouse, lends itself, and the parents, it kind of works itself out. But give us the words to start that conversation with our children so that they know how serious this is.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to model good behavior. I think as a parent, you absolutely have to make sure you have a zero tolerance yourself for drinking and driving. Don't let your children see you drink and get in a car. And then I think you have to start that conversation very, very early. For example, in South Carolina, you can drive at 15 years of age. So we need to start those conversations prior to 15 years of age. We need to be talking to our 13-year-olds, our 14-year-olds, about the risk of alcohol and driving. And we need to let them know that there is a zero tolerance. It is not acceptable to drink any amount of alcohol and get behind the wheel of a car, and that it's not acceptable to get in a car with anyone else who has been drinking. I always tell patients, I've always told my own kids, if you see one of your friends who's been drinking, go to get in their car, take their keys away. Just walk away. They will thank you for it later, but take their keys away. I also have two daughters, a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old. So this has hit home for me for years. And I started having that conversation with my children when they were 13 years old.
Well, and also my son asked me last night, he said, if I take the keys away from somebody, what if they get mad at me? Should I run with their keys? I said, they may get mad at you because they've been drinking, but they will thank you for it. And yes, run, you know, but what about
right.
The consequences? Because he asked specifically, what happens if I call you from a party where kids are drinking and I don't want to go home with them? Will you be mad at me?
The answer there is very easy, and again, this is a conversation that needs to happen before any of the kids might be drinking. Your child needs to know from the beginning they can call you for a ride home at any time for any reason, and there will be no questions asked at that time. That you will have a conversation later about it, but there will be no questions asked at that time. They need to know that that is a 100% guarantee. They can call from anywhere, and you will help them get home. And I've also lived through that scenario with my kids, and they have made the right decision every time.
Well, and also I pointed out to my son, he said, well, what if my friends don't want to go home with my parents? I said, then I will pay for a cab to come and get you, but I will always come and get you. And if there's something, you know, you can go into a separate room, call me. I mean, all of these things came up, Dr. Greenhouse. What if they see me calling my parents? They're going to think I'm, you know, some big loser. But I mean, these are all issues that we have to bring up and try and reinforce and then reassure them that this doesn't make them a loser, but it makes them alive.
It makes them a winner, and it keeps them alive, honestly. And these issues don't go away when the kids get out of high school. They will follow them into a college setting. I know my older daughter is in college now, and her sorority has a system where when the kids go out at night, they can their sorority will pay for taxis to take them back to campus. And I believe she just finished her sophomore year at Duke, and I believe that all of these sororities at Duke do the same thing.
And I think that's wonderful to have these kinds of programs.
When they spend at a party.
And even in some communities, and listeners, check with your communities, and you can even call your local police department and find out what if there is a process for that. So we have about a minute and a half left. So give us a little bit more advice about, you know, kids and drunk driving and ways that parents can advocate and that you can get your children involved in advocating in the community.
I think a lot of that has to go through the school system. I think if you can get even one child in a school to be a strong advocate, and you can get kids to sign up for prom promise kind of things or where they say, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. If they do it as a group, the kids will do it together. And they'll make a bond over that kind of thing. So I think some of that has to happen in the schools, but I think the biggest thing is that it has to start very, very early at home before it can get to the schools. I think the most important thing is an open line of communication between the parents and the child. That obviously has to start even before they become teenagers. But the child needs to know they can talk to their parents about anything. That can be drinking, it can be driving, it can be drugs, alcohol, sexual activity. They need to know the line of communication is open. That if they're concerned about something they're doing, if they're concerned about something their friends are doing, that they can talk to their parents about it. I think if you've got that, they're much more likely to make the right decisions when it matters.
I think you're absolutely right. And when you start that discussion with your child, as I did with mine, it turned into a discussion about drugs and alcohol and all of these other things, and was really a good long hour and a half discussion on all of these things with a little bit of putting the fear of God in them, you know, about the dangers and the sobering statistics that are going on today. So I thank you so much, Dr. Greenhouse, for this information. And parents can look up Emma's Law. They can look up advocacy and community activities for their children. They can get involved in the community and the school's programs with MAD and SAD. Get your children to be involved. Open the lines of communication, as Dr. Greenhouse has pointed out, is one of the best things we can do as parents. And take it from a parent of a teen. It works. You just got to get in there. Get open with your kids, because that's how you'll know what they're doing, who they're hanging out with, where they are, all of those things. This is Melanie Cole. You're listening to Healthy Children right here on Radio MD, and all of our expert guests are provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics in conjunction with their consumer website, healthychildren.org. Thanks for listening, and stay well.